Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Ghoul Girls. I'm your host, Britt, and this is my lovely co-host, Sister Extraordinaire.
Hi. Oh, I like the extraordinaire part. Hi, guys. It's Jessica. Welcome back.
Welcome back. This is our third episode, guys. We're very excited to be back. Sorry for the little delay. Just been a lot of busyness in our lives lately. This episode is titled Vanished, where we're going to be discussing a couple of our favorite or most interesting missing cases, missing people. It's probably one of my favorite topics. I don't like people who disappear, but I do like mysteries and I like reading stories about strange disappearances. I have like a whole folder of different stories that I like to just read before I go to bed and freak myself out and stuff.
You're checking your back seat. You're making sure you take different routes home, those kind of things.
Yeah, no, same route, Jesse. We don't go to different routes, or else we're really gonna get kidnapped.
No, I heard that when people are following you, you're supposed to take like different routes home every day. Well, I don't know. I haven't been a missing person, so maybe I'm doing it right. I don't know.
You know what? You're probably doing it right because you're not missing. Anyways, yeah. Just wanted to say a quick update. Thanks everyone for the feedback. I know that our last episode, our audio was kind of jacked up. That was my bad. Apparently, I have trouble talking into a mic, but I promise this episode will be a lot better. We're still new to this podcasting, so bear with us. I'm pretty sure by like episode 7, we'll probably have a perfect, proper, we're gonna be top-notch podcasting podcasters.
Top-notch.
Top-notch, top-notch.
There you go.
So, for this first story, would you like to go first, Jesse, or you want me, or
you can go first. I always like hearing you talk.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so my topic, I did a lot of research on this because, like I said, I have multiple people that I love talking about, and I shouldn't say that I love people disappearing, but I do enjoy reading stories about, like, I'm the type of person where if I hear these famous people going missing, I like to come up with my own theories of how and what happened to them. So for tonight's story, for me, I chose a very interesting subject. His name is Taylor Granger. So let me tell you about this guy. Taylor Granger was born October 7th, 1948.
That's my birthday.
That is my twin sister's birthday. Not my twin, but my sister who is a twin. He was born October 7th, 1948, and he hailed from Duncan, Vancouver Island. It's a little fishing lodging town in British Columbia, Canada. So, yeah, this guy was pretty much what people like to call him. They said Granger was exceptionally gifted in constructing and repairing all different types of mechanical devices. Like, this guy was a genius. He actually dropped out of school in the eighth grade. So he dropped out of school in the eighth grade. And, you know, despite his lack of education, he was considered by everyone that knew him to be a self-taught mechanical wizard.
Oh, so, wow. I was pretty stupid in the eighth grade, so yeah, kudos to him.
Yeah, I was more of a nerd. I'm not really a science person. I do like watching Bill Nye the Science Guy, but
Bill, sorry.
I watch YouTube tutorials on how to fucking fix my AC sometimes, you know? He was just really gifted when it came to mechanics. So, he worked when he dropped out at the eighth grade. He started teaching himself how to be a mechanic. So he was a self-taught mechanic. He ended up getting an apprenticeship with his neighbor, who was a mechanic at the time and kind of, worked under him for a while. He worked in welding. He was a heavy machinery repairman. This is some of his accomplishments that I was just in awe about. So by the age of 14, he had built a single cylinder automobile. So by the age of 14, this guy built a fucking car. I don't know about you guys, but by the time I was 14, I was like still trying to work how to figure out how my straightener straightens my hair straight, you know?
like why, where does he come from?
This guy, I mean, I can't emphasize how smart he was.
He was like a little Einstein or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. His very close friend, his name was Bob Nielsen. He said this about him. This is a quote from him. He said, "I guess you could call him a somewhat of an eccentric genius." So he was super, super smart. You know, everyone described him as being this like, brilliant guy, but he was kind of, he was very different. You know, he was really shy. He just was always trying to test himself. By the age of, 17, he actually rebuilt a giant bulldozer that older mechanics had given up on. These are seasoned mechanics. These guys, they said, I was reading an article about how these mechanics who had been working on it, they could not figure out how to get this bulldozer to run. You know, 17-year-old Taylor comes over here and just demolishes it. You know, he rocked that shit.
He rocked it. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So this kid was, like, good with his hand.
Yeah, he's really good. His brain was just something to be, like, to be admired. He's just so smart. He was so bright. In 1969, in his early 20s, Taylor hiked through a trail over half a mile into dense forest to get this ramshack remains of a train that had been abandoned during the Great Depression. So it was this train in the middle of the forest that during the Great Depression that they kind of just abandoned there. And he ended up taking apart the engine. And mind you, this had already been ransacked during World War II. It was scavenged for, I believe it was trucks and drive shift were missing. So just different parts of it was missing. So he ended up hauling this big giant engine, steam engine, through the forest to his house. Well, he actually lived with his parents, his mother and his stepfather. I couldn't really find any information about the father, though, which I thought was kind of strange. I couldn't find anything about his father, only about his mother and his stepfather. But he actually really, really respected his stepfather a lot. He was really close to his parents. Anyways, his parents' residence was actually nicknamed the Sleepy Hollow Museum because of all the different machinery that was left inside the front of his house. They would have old cars, pieces of aircrafts, different engines, transmissions. It was kind of like a junkyard graveyard, someone described it. So anyways, he brought over this rusted engine or steam engine, and he ended up in less than 2 years, he rebuilt the steam engine in perfect working order. So he rebuilt it from head to toe with the only tools that he had were, you know, his own tools, his mind, his brilliant, brilliant mind, and, you know, just spare parts laying around in his junkyard. And he ended up rebuilding it, and he actually sold it back to the train museum. They went on tour in the British Columbian Forest Discovery Center. So he sold that back for $20,000. He actually gave, his family actually ended up putting $10,000 aside from him, and he gave the other $10,000 to his family. So $10,000 in his bank and $10,000 to his family.
Oh, wow. Said,
yeah, he wasn't much for spending money. He wasn't really, he didn't really live like a crazy lifestyle. He was very quiet. He was very shy and soft-spoken. And so, you know, once he rebuilt that engine to kind of test himself out more, he started, he got his pilot license. So in 1973, he ended up getting his pilot license, and he ended up purchasing a vintage Kitty Warhawk warplane, and he got really into interstellar travel. So, yeah, it was pretty interesting. So they ended up nicknaming him Gentle Ben.
Aw, so, Gentle Ben. Yeah, what a cute name.
Yeah, they said he was a really big sweetheart. He was 6'3". 6'3", this guy was big, 6'3", burly man. They used to call him a bear, but he was as sweet as can be. He ended up getting really into interstellar travel. So this guy started getting really into trying to figure out how he could build a UFO. And he became kind of borderline obsessed. He would read all kinds of books, essays, articles, scientific papers, you know, just a lot of anything that he could get his hands on. Unfortunately, in the 70s, there were more like eyewitness accounts than there were actual like scientific research on it. So he would have to do his own research. And he ended up building a spacecraft in his backyard. He built himself a little UFO kind of hideaway. He called it his home away from home. So after a few months, years of him being so obsessed with it, after just constantly reading about all these things, he ended up confiding in Bob Nielsen, which was one of his close friends. I think I mentioned him earlier, that he actually had been getting messages from what he believed to be extraterrestrials inviting him on a space expedition. Like, they wanted to kind of show him, you know, how their travel and how they were able to move about and, you know, move about in space and everything. And they wanted to show him interstellar travel, which, I mean, a lot of people in his hometown, you know, you would think, oh, this guy's crazy. A lot of people knew that he wasn't crazy. So when he started spouting this stuff, they were kind of like, you know, this guy's really smart. Like, he's a freaking genius. You know, what's going on with this? So what I kind of thought was really interesting, but he didn't have any known cases of mental illness. Aside from him being a little bit shy and awkward, he wasn't suffering from depression. He wasn't any mental illness or anything like that. He was perfectly healthy, you know, plenty of exercise. He was a genuinely good person. And all of a sudden, his obsession had kind of taken over his life of trying to figure out what exactly how far he could push the limits of his mind. And thus the really strange idea of extraterrestrials that were actually talking to him. I thought that was pretty scary, really, really interesting. I always have a fear of being super smart that the aliens want to abduct me. That used to be one of my, it did. It used to be one of my fears. I remember we used to have bunk beds, and I would remember laying in bed and thinking like, I am the smartest of all my mom's children. The aliens are coming for me.
Oh, wow.
Right. You know?
That's like, nice to hear.
Yeah. So, So, I'm sorry. It's true. It's true. But yeah, like, I thought that was super, super interesting. So, this is where it gets a little bit strange. So, during the end of his, or not the end of his life, because we don't know if he's dead or not, but on the night before he disappeared, he actually sat down with his stepdad. His mother was, unfortunately, she was actually on vacation in Hawaii. It was the first vacation she had taken in years. So she went on vacation in Hawaii, and the stepfather had stayed behind. And he actually had a really big heart-to-heart with his stepfather, you know, telling him that he really appreciates everything he'd done for him, and he wouldn't be the man he was today if it wasn't for his stepfather. And, you know, he just gave him a really sweet, kind of like a goodbye. Little did he know that would be the last time he'd actually ever see his son.
Oh, that's so sad.
On the night of November 29th, 1980, there was a really bad, really bad storm in the Vancouver Island, which was where he lived with his family. It had actually knocked out electricity. A lot of the locals were actually scurrying for shelter. And during this violent, violent storm, they said that it was the first of and last of its kind. To this day, they've never had a storm as violent and as crazy as that one, which I thought was pretty interesting. I actually did a little research, and I looked up reports on that day of how the weather was, and it does coincide with a lot of articles that I read that it was one of the worst storms that area had ever seen.
So, oh, shit.
Yeah, it was really, really, really crazy. But during all this time, he ended up jumping in his 1972, it was a Pell Dastin pickup truck. And he ended up driving. He just started to drive. He actually left a note on his stepfather's door. I'm going to read you the note because it was pretty, kind of was a little sad, a little heartbreaking. It says, "Dear mother and father, I have gone away to walk aboard an alien ship, as reoccurring dreams assured a 42-month interstellar voyage to explore the vast universe, then return. I am leaving behind all my possessions to you, as I will no longer require the use of any. Please use the instructions in my will as a guide to help. Love, Granger." So this is the interesting thing about his will. So when he did write his will, instead of putting the word deceased, he scratched out and he put, I believe it was, I hear your dog in the back.
Do you hear her heavy breathing?
Yeah. She's really into it. So instead of the word deceased, I believe he scribbled out and he put departure. So, ooh, yeah.
That's
so
smart.
Yeah.
Catchy wordplay. I like it.
Yeah, it was really interesting. So, so pretty much no one has ever seen or heard from him since then. The only interesting thing that I could find, since then was that, I believe it was six years later. Let me go to the investigation. So the last contact that anyone had for him, it was about 6 p.m. on that Saturday Eve that, you know, the town would really have any last viewing of him. They said Taylor entered a Bob's Grill, which was a local diner. His appearance, it didn't raise any eyebrows or anything like that. He was just a normal night. He ended up actually buying his friends drinks. He had a little kind of like a farewell party for himself. She remembered there was a waitress there, and she remembered that he wore a brown knitted sweater zipped from the front, black t-shirt underneath, jeans and logger boots. He didn't have any winter clothes, which was strange because it was pretty cold outside. All he had was a coat. But they actually did discover his coat a couple of days later inside a doghouse that Granger had built for his huge Newfoundland dog, Lady.
Aww.
So, yeah, he ended up leaving his coat for some reason was inside his doghouse, the doghouse that he had built. You know, he paid his bill around 6:30, and that's when the storm started going through the city. Yeah. So after he disappeared, that was the last time anyone had reported seeing him. So after he disappeared, the local police, or the Canadian Mountain Police, the Royal Canadian Mountain Police, I really like that, got with Jim Taylor, which is the stepfather, and they proceeded to look for the son. They didn't have any leads for about 4 years. This guy just disappeared without a trace. They couldn't find the vehicle. They couldn't find anything. Until about 4 years later, they actually found, they found out that no one had actually stolen the car. The tags had expired and no one had re-registered the car. So they don't think that he was kidnapped or anything like that, you know, hijacked or anything like that. Another thing was, 6 years after that, the truck was actually found near a mountain on Duncan, Vancouver. Apparently, it was actually blown to bits in what looked like it would have been a mass explosion. So his car exploded in the middle
of
the forest.
What the hell?
In the middle of the forest on the base of a mountain. But the creepy, kind of strange thing is that there was no body ever found. Nothing. No body, nothing, just some explosives that had, or residue had been left in the car, which I thought was pretty strange. The Mount Sicker, which is the mountain where, they had found the car, actually had UFO sightings. Which
no
I thought was
way.
Really interesting. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
People had actually been reporting different objects in the skies. zipping from left to right and hovering a few inches between trees and stuff like that. So that was pretty interesting that it would disappear. His truck would not disappear, but his truck would be exploded in an area where extraterrestrial activity was supposed to be around, or
UFOs. Oh my gosh, it's all connected.
It's always all connected. So that was actually something that I thought was really, really interesting. It's just really, really strange that this guy has disappeared without a trace. Nothing, no footprints from the vehicle, nothing, no bone residue, no bodies, DNA, nothing. It was like he just up and vanished and left behind his truck. So I actually kind of give me a little freaky, because that's one of my biggest fears, if anyone knows me, is that I have a really big fear of aliens. I do believe in them. I believe in aliens more than I believe in ghosts sometimes. And I feel like this guy was just an extremely bright and gifted, talented young man to be at the age of 14 and be able to build an automotive. I believe that his mind and his intellect was probably way past his prime, you know, way past, you know, the 1970s. You know, this guy was thinking about interstellar travel before that was something that we as the United States government even dreamed about. He was so talented. Like, why wouldn't other species out in space, you know, want his brain as well? Different theories that people think may have happened. They think that maybe he had went to the forest to commit suicide. But, you know, from his locals, friends, family, everyone said that that was not the type of person that he was. You know, he was very gentle, very kind. He didn't suffer from any mental illness. So that was something that people were kind of like, no, we don't really think that he committed suicide. Other people think that he just vanished, just like disappeared and started a new life. I also don't believe that, because he left behind all his money. He didn't take no money. He didn't take nothing with him, you know? So I thought that was like, I doubt he would be starting off a life in freaking Chicago or some upper Canadian, you know, Providence. I don't think that that's what he did, because he didn't take any of his money that he would have needed to start a new life. You know, he left his car and blew it to bits. It just doesn't make sense for this person to just completely disappear and vanish, no trace. But unfortunately in the world, that's something that happens far too often. Like, people go missing all the time. I just thought it was an interesting case because of how smart he was and how much, like, if he would have still been alive today, we probably could have had, you know, technological advances, just because he was such a bright person.
This guy literally, if he had lived, would have turned the tide for technology for mankind. Like, we would have been in another revolution. That's insane.
Yeah, he was just, they said he was just a genius. That's the only way people could describe him, is that he was a genius. To be so gifted with his hands, with his brain, to be researching interstellar travel, and then, I mean, I personally think that maybe aliens did abduct him. That, or was the U.S. government, or, because, you know, he may be Canadian, but the government, the United States government, is always trying to fucking steal people away.
You think the U.S. government, like, honey-dicked him and pretended to be aliens to get him, like, in their hands?
I don't think the 1970s, they had that kind of technology to send him, like, dream waves.
They could have been, like, putting, like, LSD or some, like, acid in his food, like, in his water, like, slowly, like, you know, there's a lot of theories from, like, the 60s and 70s of, like, shit that they would do to people, so I don't know. That's my theory from hearing your case.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it could be he could have been abducted by, you know, maybe a different government that really wanted his brain to get him to work. You know, anything's possible, because at this point, I don't trust the government. Anarchist for life, guys. Just kidding. Just kidding. We live in a great nation.
Hey, the little FBI guy looking through your webcam, he's listening, Brittany. You gotta call it.
His name is John. What's up, baby? Special shout out to you. All right. Anyways, that concludes my story for me. Do you have anything to add? What do you think, Jess? What do you think happened to him?
I'm like, honestly, I think that, okay, this is my theory. We're going to get a little weird here. But like I said, during that time, there was a lot of like government testing. I think there's even like the government owned up to like giving people LSD to see like how it affects people and shit like that. So maybe someone had heard about him and wanted him to work for them or the government or I don't know, some secret agency. But maybe they're slowly like making him think that he was going to go with aliens to like get him to work for them. But, you know, also like, he left his coat with his dog. Like, how sweet. He probably knew his dog was going to miss him and put his coat inside the doghouse.
That's so cute. I love that. Oh, my God. I fucking love dogs.
Also, like, leaving when his mom was in Hawaii, like, maybe it's because he knew that if she was there, he wouldn't be able to leave.
Yeah, he was really close with his family. You know, I thought it was really sweet how he you know, he told his stepdad, you know, thank you for everything that you've done for me, blah, blah, blah. I love you. I thought that was so heartwarming, like. To know that that was the last conversation that he had with his family. I was reading that they actually left their back door unlocked for 4 years, hoping that one day he would walk through that door and come home to them, which kind of broke my heart.
But didn't he say that he was going to come back in his letter?
Yeah, he did say that he was going to come back, but he never came back. So, like, I kind of theorized, you know, what if he did get abducted by aliens and, you know, he was able to see the universe and he was able to understand the mechanics, quantum physics, and he was really able to figure out the interstellar travel that these extraterrestrials used. And maybe he just decided not to come back, you know, or they wouldn't let him come back. You know, it's a lot of...
What if, because they're aliens, what if they're like, okay, we're going to drop you off now. And, like, they just thought, okay, we'll just drop him off at Earth and just dropped him off anywhere.
He lands in the Atlantic Ocean and drowns,
he's like,
really?
I meant, no, not the Atlantic Ocean. He's like, drop me off on my porch. And there are those, like, he said Earth, right? And they just plop him off in the middle of the forest. They're like, he's on Earth. He'll be fine. Like, what if it was one of those things?
Okay, yeah. So Mr. Jungle Man, Gentle Ben is out there.
I don't think they have concepts of, like, continents and, like, cities. They're like, it's America. And they stick him in, or he's in Canada, right? Look, it's Canada, and they stick him in, like,
Jessica,
a little higher
these
north.
These are highly advanced beings. I'm pretty sure they're not going to drop this guy off at the fucking McDonald's down the street.
Hey, maybe. I don't know. Aliens could be dicks. I don't know. Just saying.
You know what? I think aliens are a bunch of dicks because they be abducting us and not even telling us what's going on.
Hey, consent is sexy, okay? If the aliens had asked, I would have been like, all right.
Yeah, maybe. until you get probed, my girl.
Never mind. Change my mind. Jeez, that was a good one. I was really interested with that. There's so many concepts and so many theories out there for this case. You could go on and on.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, like I said, it was crazy to me that he just vanished without a trace, and he was so freaking smart, you know, like, that always trips me out. He had been in the woods, you know, he lived in the woods, he lived in the country, he knows how to survive out there, and for him to just go disappear, like, it is just something that creeps me out. Anyways, well, that was my story, Taylor Granger. If you guys want to look up more about him, we're going to post some stuff on our Instagram. I'll post some pictures up there so you guys can check it out. Show you guys pictures of the spaceship that he built, which looked pretty rad. Really awesome. Liked it. Yeah. So, Jess, I'm interested to hear what you have to offer us. What's
okay,
going on?
Okay, ghouls and gals, take a seat back. I'm going to start. But so mine is actually a missing persons case from 2006.
Ooh.
And his name, this is a notorious story, so maybe you've heard of it, maybe you haven't, but this is actually about Brian Randall Schaefer. So Brian Randall Schaefer was a med student from Columbus, Ohio. He finished his microbiology degree, he's 27 years old, and this is just, like, his sketchy-ass disappearance, okay? So Brian Schaefer, he was a pretty cool guy. I mean, med student, loved his family, was super close to his mom, and he just loved his family so much. He was a big, like, person to his friends. He had a big personality. Everyone loved him. And on the night of around March 31st, 2006, Schaefer went out with his friends. You know, they had just finished his exams. They're about to go on spring break. So him and his friend said, hey, man, let's go bar hopping. So they go downtown.
Frat boy.
I know, frat boy, right? And they go downtown, and they were going bar hopping. They first started at this place called, like, I think it's the Ugly Tuna.
Ew.
Yeah, I know, right? But they started off at this bar, and they were going down and taking hard liquor drinks at, like, every drinking establishment that was on that street. So he was with his friend Florence, drinking, having fun, and it was actually called the Arena District. So it was just pictured, like, clubs after bars after clubs. Like, it's crazy. They each went in each one and drank a shot of hard liquor and went back down. So around midnight, they actually met up with another of their friends named Meredith Reed, who was a friend of Florence. And from there, she gave them a ride back to the Ugly Tuna Saluna, which is where they first started the night. And they were just hanging around, going for that last round of drinks before they call it a night. Well, while the three of them were there, they lost track of Brian. Like, he was there, and then he wasn't. And they spent the whole night looking for him. And they were just searching for him, calling out his name. You know, the music was loud. Talking to other people, seeing if they had found him. And they came to the point where they were actually standing outside the bar while the bar was closing and waiting for people to exit. And wow. He didn't exit. And they were like, okay, you know, maybe, because they were so fucking drunk, they're like, okay, maybe he had walked back to his apartment, which wasn't that far from where they had been partying at the Ugly Tuna Saluna.
So they're like, saying okay, that name, huh?
Ugly Tuna Saluna. Tuna Saluna. Yeah, I like it. It's catchy.
It really is.
But they let themselves think that he had walked back to the apartment. And, you know, they call it a night, haven't tried to contact him that weekend. Little backstory about Brian. So his mom had just passed away a couple of months ago. Before his disappearance, she had some kind of terminal illness. And he was so close to his mom. And, you know, a lot of accounts said that he didn't take it too hard, that he was dealing with it. But another account from his girlfriend, almost his fiance, his beautiful girlfriend, was that he did mention that it was hard for him and that she should move on to someone else, like just in passing, but she said they had gotten over it. A week after he went to the bar, that they were supposed to go together and take a flight to Miami and just have like a relaxation. So he had made plans. It's not like he was cutting everyone out of his life. Like, he had made plans to go stay with his girlfriend in Miami. He had made plans to go see his family. Like, he literally dropped off the face of the earth. So going back to that night, you know, they're like, okay, maybe Brian went back to his apartment, and they leave it. So coming around to that night, after the weekend, on Monday morning, he had missed his flight to Miami with his girlfriend. He didn't show. Wow. And the girlfriend was knocking on his door every night, waiting for him, and she thought, okay, you know, I'm going to go to the airport, and if he's there, then maybe he just needed some time alone. Like, maybe him drinking that night, maybe something happened he didn't want to tell me about, and I'll just go to the airport and wait for him. Well, she went to the airport, and he wasn't there. So then this is when it got really crazy. She would go to his apartment every night, knock on his door, and lay in his bed and just cry. Like, Brian,
did they report him missing?
Here's the thing. They didn't report him missing for about 2 weeks.
What?
Yeah, I guess because he's an adult or something. I don't know. But they didn't report him missing for 2 weeks. So she would lay in his bed every night and cry and wait for him to come home. Call him every single night and wait for him to pick up the phone. And finally, 2 weeks passed. They're like, okay, this shit's crazy. We need to file a police report, a missing persons report. So this is when the investigation started. So they look for Brian around the bar. They look for him near his campus because his campus was, like, really close to the drinking, like, fiasco that they had. And they look through CCTV cameras, all the security cameras, because the area that they were staying in was one of the most surveilled cities in, like, America. It has a bunch of, like, CCTV cameras to, like, keep an eye on, like, the public.
Yeah.
And they did an investigation. So in their investigation, they made it known that Brian did not leave through the only main entrance and exit. He didn't go that way. They checked the CCTV cameras again. It's not clear whether or not he was able to get through the back entrance, like the construction exit.
Yeah.
That they had, because it was being remodeled, and they said that someone who's belligerently drunk as he was at that time, according to his friends, would not have been able to make it through that back exit because it was under construction. He'd jump over shit and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're saying that he was so, like, drunk. Like, why didn't anyone see him? You know, so they did surveying through the streets and they brought in dogs to like sniff the bar out, and the dogs couldn't even smell him.
Yeah, it was 2 weeks later, so yeah, I can't imagine.
Yeah, I don't know either. But they also found some footage that showed Brian, Florence, and Reed going up an escalator to the bar's like main entrance around 1 in the morning. And then around 2 in the morning, they see footage of Brian talking to 2 girls, talking to them at the bar, like laughing with them. Like, I guess they had just met. You know, some Reddit theories say that he was fighting with the girls, but it turned out like maybe not to be true. And the thing is, some of the cameras at the bar, they like have a panoramic view of the bar. So they go from one end and they turn and turn and they look at the other end. So they go back and forth, and some were controlled manually. Like, someone in the security room was like moving the camera around to like watch everyone at the bar. So they couldn't get like constant footage of what was going on, but they got enough to notice that he talked to these 2 women, he said bye to them, and then he left, and then they just never saw him after that. Even after it closed, you know, they waited outside, they didn't see him. So, and then another theory is that the investigators realized that maybe he could have changed his clothes, put on a hat, kept his head down to keep him from like looking at the cameras.
Yeah.
And they're like, they don't think it's very likely that that may have happened, but the whole concept is he went into the bar and nobody saw him leave. He disappeared. No questions asked, like he was gone. And there's another theory that he may have exited through like a service door that wasn't open to the public. But every time someone goes to that service door, a camera goes on, and no camera went on that night. And people are saying, oh, well, maybe he, you know, walked back to his apartment, or maybe he fell into a river that went by the school that he was staying at. But it's so unlikely because the river was like a mile away.
Yeah.
And his apartment was half a mile, like, on the way to the river. So what would, like, if he's so intoxicated, first, how could he walk that mile? And second, why didn't he just stop at his apartment?
Yeah.
You know? Like, even though you're intoxicated, like, I'm sure you recognize what your apartment building looks like. But police dogs, they looked through dumpsters, they looked through waste containers, they asked residents if they had seen him.
It's and just he also crazy that they took 2 weeks to report him missing. That's the thing that I'm tripping out about. Like, how? 2 weeks. How are you not going to notice that?
I know. I know. Missing. Like, when I read that, I was so pissed. I'm like, hey, Brittany, right now, let's make a pact. If I go missing, do not wait 24 hours. Go find me.
I will definitely find you.
If you wait 2 days, I will be pissed. Go look.
Super scary. All right. Good deal. I'm sorry.
Okay. So people are speculating that maybe because his mom had recently died, that he wanted to, like, go away and grieve in solitude. But if that was the case, like, why make it permanent? This guy has been missing now for 12 years.
Yeah, that's
kind of, you know, so they looked through the lake, and they didn't find anything. Not a wallet, not a shoe. I mean, they have footage of what he was wearing, so they kept their eye out for that. And this is when it gets a little, like, sketchy. So they made his friend Reed and Randy Schaefer, like, go through a polygraph test.
Okay.
And so Randy Schaefer, his dad. And they made them go through a polygraph test while his friend Florence, which was a guy that he had first went to the bar with, refused to take the polygraph test and actually lawyered up and got himself a lawyer. And his reason for that was he complied this whole time. He answered all of these questions, and he said that he shouldn't have been subjected to a polygraph test, and he didn't want them to think that he did it. I don't know. Or he had anything to do with it.
That kind of sounds like he did it.
I know. It does, right? And so he declined to take one. And they also tracked down the 2 women that Brian was seen last talking to in 2009. When they were talking to them, and they had asked them in 2009 if they had ever knew anything about him, and no, nothing.
They didn't remember him?
No. I mean, they remember him, but they said, like, nothing really came of their conversation. And also, it turns out that the FBI never asked them to take a polygraph test.
The girls?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they wouldn't have much reason to have the girls take a poly. All he did was have a conversation with them. I could see that. I would be more concerned about the friend who refused to take a polygraph test, because you never know. They're all drunk. Maybe he, are these, what, like, rich white kids, right? You know? they probably have money. You know, maybe he did something to him while he was drunk. You know, called someone and they got rid of the body. But how would they get rid of it without anyone noticing it?
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's crazy. Like, I know it sounds like it could have been someone, like, maybe at the bar he got into a fight or something and it went the wrong way. But there was no footage of him leaving and no accounts of any, like, physical or, like, any fights breaking out in the bar. Yeah. Or else, because, I mean, it's a bar. Everyone would have seen you. If someone got in a fight, they would have been like, hey, those guys are fighting over there.
Yeah, that's true.
And if they were in the alley, they would have recorded it with the CCTV cameras. But get this. So every evening before going to bed, his girlfriend, the one that he was going to go to Miami with, she would call his phone every single night after the night that he disappeared. And it always went to voicemail, you know, of course. But she said one time in September, after the disappearance, she had called and it actually rang 3 times before it went to voicemail. So usually when you call someone, it rings a bunch of times and then it goes to voicemail. This phone rang 3 times. And she flipped out and she's like, I only kept calling it because, you know, hearing his voice, like the voicemail is like the best sound, you know, it's the last thing she has left of him, his voice. And she said, she knew no one's going to pick up, but just hearing the 3 rings that time, she had to report it. And Singular, I don't know if you remember Singular back then in those early 2000s days.
Yeah, yeah.
But Singular actually made a report and they said that, that 3 rings that she heard might have been like a computer glitch because his phone didn't have a GPS, so they couldn't even locate it. Oh, but they did say that a ping from his phone was detected at a cell phone tower in Hillard, which was 14 miles from where they were in Columbus.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's nuts. And you know what? Police say that when it first happened, they would get about 3 calls every month from their tip hotline with, like, new leads about the case. But none of them ever went anywhere. And Brian had, I don't know if you remember Pearl Jam's song Alive.
Yeah.
They had like a stick figure on the single art, like the single art cover. Yeah,
I remember.
He actually had that tattoo. And he was a big Pearl Jam fan.
Oh,
like,
wow. We love Pearl Jam.
I know, I love Pearl Jam. But he said that if he wasn't going to be a doctor, that he would live somewhere in the tropics playing in a band. And so Pearl Jam actually heard about his missing persons case. And for one of their shows, they would actually stop between songs. And the lead singer, Eddie Vedder, he would actually take time to ask people for, like, tips about Brian's disappearances. And be hey, you know, this guy's missing for this many years. If you guys have anything, you know, call. This. But I thought that was really cool.
I love Pearl Jam. What a bunch of stand-up musicians. I love when celebrities get involved in these kind of things. I love it.
But unfortunately, like, no one said anything and nothing happened from there. But there were reported sightings in Michigan, Texas, and actually Sweden. And those were, in Sweden. And those were all investigated.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool, though. I mean, hopefully they find this guy. Hopefully, you know, he really just wanted to get away. You know, I would hate for him to be murdered. I don't like people who are murdered.
Yeah. Well, actually, his dad, Randy Schaefer... So his dad, who had just, you know, his wife just died, his kid is missing. He actually got so desperate that he hired a psychic. And the psychic actually told him, like, so it's, I guess they're called psychic consultants or whatever. Mm-hmm. But a psychic told him that Brian's body was in water and it was near a bridge or it was near a pier. And that the dad and the brother should go out and look for it. And so the dad and the brother, and along with other people, like other citizens who had heard about the case, actually went through like the river nearby and spent a lot of their free times on the shore of the river that ran through the adjacent to the campus that he was staying on, and would just be searching for the body near the bridges.
Oh, shit.
And I thought that was really fucked up. So if that psychic is lying, if this is a fake psychic and she told him to look in the water,
she is a bastard.
Screw you, you know?
Screw you, psychic lady.
You know, if it's legit, hopefully one day they find him and they're at peace with it. But hopefully he's alive. I mean, it's crazy. There's so many theories.
That's really crazy.
There's one theory that kind of stands out. I don't know if you've ever heard of the smiley face murder theory.
No.
So the smiley face killer... they speculate that there's this person that's been murdering, like, older, like, 30 to 40-year-old men, usually around, like, in college, like, doctors and stuff like that. They think that there's someone who's been murdering these people and throwing them in rivers. So there's, like, 45 accounts of men 30 to 40 years old who just got out of either it was like a celebration, some kind of celebration or party, and they wound up dead in a river. And they say that for every case that there is of those, the 45 cases, there's a smiley face graffitied nearby. Oh, wow. And in Brian's case, there was a smiley face graffitied nearby. So people are speculating that this might be the smiley face killer. Well, there's some issues with that theory because they're saying that smiley faces are one of the most popular things to graffiti.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I would always draw smiley faces in my notebook.
I would too. So,
like, it's just something that people do.
Okay.
So there's...
Theory. What if they're all... These guys are going missing because they're tired of their lives and they draw smiley faces because it's like some initiation to a club of 40-year-old men who don't want to be around people. And they all live in a little island off the base of Costa Rica, just chilling, drinking their mimosas, you know, called the Smiley Face Club.
Maybe. I don't know. But maybe they're pulling off, like, what's his name? Chris McCandless, the guy who just, like, the rich white guy, or he came from a nice family and he just dropped off the face of the earth and goes living in, like, the Alaska wilderness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Maybe they're pulling that. But, so the crazy thing is, like, people are like, oh, it's a smiley face killer. Well, like I said, most graffitied thing out there. And so they don't, a lot of people don't believe that theory. But it's still crazy to think that no body is found, no evidence. He literally disappeared and it's been 12 years now. Okay, so another crazy thing is that in September of 2008, which I believe is like a couple years after his initial disappearance, unfortunately, his dad was clearing debris from his yard during a heavy windstorm, and a piece of tree, like a branch, broke off and fatally struck him, and he wasn't found until the next morning. But in his obituary, which was posted online, there was a condolence book, and one of the signatures said, "To Dad, love, Brian." And it was from and it was traced back from the U.S. Virgin Islands. So... this was a suggestion that Brian might have left Columbus, Ohio, and lived a new life somewhere else. So there was a big investigation, and it actually found that it was posted from a publicly accessed computer in a public library, and it was determined to be a hoax. Like, they think someone just went and posted that to be, like, an asshole.
That's so fucked up.
Yeah, so to this day, Brian has not been found, and he has been missing officially for 12 years, 3 months, and 6 days.
That is so sad.
Yeah. So, no spooky aliens in this one, just a crazy, unsolved disappearance.
Yeah, I think those are always the most saddest and scariest. Never knowing what happens to anyone when they do go missing and stuff like that.
Yeah, like that closure and so many, like, opened wounds, you know? Never knowing what happened. Like, his poor girlfriend sleeping in his bed every night waiting for him to get back. It must have been hard packing up all his shit.
That's really messed up.
Yeah, so. We're both all right, so sad.
So sad for her. So sad. I don't know, it's just, that's pretty crazy. Was it his friends? Did he fall on trip? Like, it kind of makes you wonder, you guys. Be safe out there. Remember, stay in groups. Some crazy, crazy shit out there. Just gotta be careful.
Yeah, exactly. But I hope you guys liked those stories. And, you know, if you have your own theories, hit us up. Like, I would love to hear them.
Yeah, I would too. Yeah, so that's the story of Taylor Granger and...
What was your guys' name? Brian Schaefer.
Brian Schaefer. If you guys have any theories, like Jess said, just leave us something in our comments, send us a DM. We'd also really appreciate it if you guys review our podcast on iTunes, since we're on iTunes and Spotify. We'd really appreciate it. We will love you forever. And trust
forever.
Us. You-
forever.
Forever. You know, it would really help us out. Just leave us a quick review. Let us know how we've been doing. Be sure to follow our Facebook page and our Instagram. We'll put updates on there. We have a pretty interesting Instagram page. A lot of did you know kind of facts on that if you guys want to check it out. And also, anything else you want to add, Jesse?
I hope you guys liked our third episode, Vanished. It was a lot of fun researching this for you guys. And like Britt said, leave us a review and catch us on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, and Buzzsprout.
Oh, yeah. Again, I think that concludes it. We're hoping to do a bonus episode maybe coming out this week because it is Friday the 13th, guys.
Friday the 13th. Keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, your ears open. Because I do want to do something special for Friday the 13th, you know, because it's all spooky and we only get 2 Friday the 13ths this year. It's only once a year, and this year we got it twice.
I love it. Well, yeah. With that being said, thanks, guys, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.